Well, in my last class, I had Brad at the end of the semester, and I had comments that he had such dire bad news. I should put him in the front of the semester. So that's where you're going to get to. Guys, don't forget to sign up. Thank you. Okay, Allie, you ready? All right, I'll let these guys sign up and we'll start. So hopefully you all here are signed up for Grad 592. Welcome to any visitors we have, either online or in the room. I so appreciated your questions last time. Keep it up. That just keeps me on my toes and it gives me a sense of what you're understanding and what you're not understanding. And this river is a really complicated river, but it's a fun one. There's lots of good things going on the Colorado River. So we're going to talk today about kind of the law and the management of the river. We have, it's a series of statutes, a treaty, rules passed by the Bureau of Reclamation. They all come together in what we call reverently the law of the river. It's been compared to a cult because the law is the law. With dire climate change circumstances, I think there's some changes in the law. And I think it's just really exciting. But first, I want to go. You had a couple questions about the prior appropriation doctrine, and I promise I'd come back and talk a little bit about how that works on the ground. So remember, the prior appropriation doctrine is the earliest to put the water to use has the best right. First in time, first in right. The water has to be put to beneficial use. You can't just take the water and run it down the river or another canal with no use. You can use it off channel, a civic change from the riparian doctrine. And if you don't use it, you'll lose it. So there's statutes that say if you haven't used your water right for 10 years in Colorado, you are subject to abandonment. And every 10 years, the state engineer, who is the water administrator, water cop, we have a former state engineer, Hi Dick, online, who said he wasn't offended if I called him a water cop. And they look to make sure that you're taking the water you're supposed to take. So early on, I found that this example, very oversimplified understanding, but it seemed to work the best to get people to kind of get a sense of the prior appropriation system and how it works on the ground. So let's say we have a river. We have a junior water rights who is upstream of the senior water right. You see that here? There's the junior. Let's say the junior has a water right of 10 CFS. The senior also has a water right of 10 CFS, which is great. If the river is running 20 CFS, they both get their full supply. However, that's not usually the case. If there is only 10 CFS in the river, then the junior gets nothing because the senior has placed a call. He has the right to all of the 10 CFS. So that's basically the prime directive for prior appropriation. But of course, there are lots of different complications that come with that. If there's 12 CFS in the river, and by the way, these slides are going to be posted on Canvas. So don't feel like if you're missing it or you'd rather listen than take notes, that's available. So if there's 12 CFS, then what do we got? Well, the junior gets 2 and the senior gets all 10. Okay. Pretty easy math. But we have something called return flows. When you put water on a field or into a municipal system, you have water that comes out. and those are called return flows. Generally, return flows, for this example, I said for a 10 CFS write, if the junior put all 10 CFS on his fields, 5 would come back to the river. Okay? So, with that, if there's 12 CFS in the river, the junior can take 4. Now, remember, before he could only take 2. He can take 4 because he knows that 2 CFS is going to return to the river. And that makes the senior whole downstream of the river. Oops. There are these incredible charts in the division and state engineer's office before computers that outlined these rivers and all the diversions on and off the rivers and all of the return flows. So again, this is a very simplified example. But this is how prior appropriation works. As I said last week, the reason we, when it moved into a compact phase, was because we were worried that we were going to be the junior upstream appropriator while California was developing faster than us. And so Delph Carpenter convinced other folks that we could use the compact clause of the United States Constitution and we could come to an agreement. And we did. So here's a list of the law of the river. Now, there are lots of other laws that go along with this, like the Endangered Species Act, like NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act, like the Clean Water Act. But this is that solid group of laws and rules that we call the law of the river. I'm gonna try to go through this and explain where some of this came from and what the reason was for a lot of it. So again, we have the compact. We could not agree, 7 basin states and the federal government could not agree how to divvy up the river to individual states. They were down to their last 3 days of negotiation in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is outside the basin, by the way, but uses Colorado River water. And the idea was, can we just split the river into 2 halves? The upper basin and the lower basin. The dividing point is Lee Ferry, which is right here. So, okay, that seemed to be good. The use was not a diversion, right? It was a consumptive use. So we in the upper basin have a right to consumptively use 7.5 million acre feet if it's in the river. Under the compact, we have an obligation to not deplete the river less than 7.5 million acre feet a year, or actually it's 75 million acre feet over 10 years. That accounts for the variability in flows that we have with rivers. The compact acknowledged that Mexico treaty was probably going to happen, and that if there was a treaty, the states would split the upper basin and lower basin would kind of split that treaty obligation. The way it works is Mexico is the senior. They get the 1.5 million acre feet first, then it gets divided up among the states. The compact, in order to become enacted, was signed by representatives of the federal government and each of the basin states governors. Then, in order to make it real, the 7 states had to go to their legislatures and the legislature had to approve the compact as state law. Also, Congress had to approve the compact. So a compact is not only state law, but it's federal. And that's pretty important. That weighs very heavily. Arizona and California are bitter enemies. Still are, probably. So I think it's going to be, they talk to each other at least. Arizona refused to sign the compact. Their legislature did not endorse the compact. So we have this thing, this compact, with six states having signed, and it's in front of Congress. That was all, what are we going to do now? You know, this is politics. So I'm going to come back to that. Talked about the treaty. The compact protects present perfected rights. If you have a pre-1922 water right in any of these states, you are never curtailed because of the compact. Most of those rights belong to agriculture, which is why our cities are a little bit worried about what's going on right now. Arizona finally did approve the compact in 1944 because they wanted this crazy project called the Central Arizona Project. And Congress said, if you want a deal, you got to pay the money. So the legislature approved the compact. The compact acknowledged the federal government's responsibility to Indian tribes, to Native Americans. That's all it did, it just acknowledged. I'm going to come back to the tribes in a minute. So when they divided up this river, 7.5 and 7.5, and then, oh yes, the lower basin got an additional 1 million acre feet. Now it's traditional when you, hope no reporters are out there, it's traditional when you negotiate with Arizona, because everything you do in Arizona has to be done, approved by the legislature, you come to a deal, and the next day you have to give even more. That's their standard way of negotiating. Not because that's how they do it, it's because of the political setup in their system, in their state system. Or maybe it is because that's the way they want to do it. So there's a lot of articles out there, and there's a really good book to read about what was the science in 1920. How much water was in the river? Well, there were two basic studies done, one by the predecessor to the Bureau of Reclamation, and the other one by USGS. So USGS said, oh no, you're saying 17 to 18 million acre feet of water in the river? No way, Jose. It's a lot less than that. The reclamation guy said, oh yeah, we got plenty of water. Here's the charts. We've got plenty of water. Not a big deal. We can divide this up easily among the states. Wrong. If you're interested in more information about that, there's a book called Science Be Damned. It's by John Fleck and Eric Kuhn, and they take on this, was the correct science chosen, or was it actually spurred? It was in front of them. You know, and when you're negotiating these things, and you have science, you know, you want the best science. You look at all these different data, but you have to finally come to pick something. Well, they picked the wrong numbers, what happened. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that. So in 1945, we did a treaty with Mexico. It was very interesting. Mexico had been on the United States for several years to negotiate a treaty. Well, it took a world war and the threat of the Japanese coming through the southern border for the United States to say, yeah, we think a water deal is a really good idea. And so we did. We got the treaty. And it divides up Rio Grande, Tijuana, and Colorado rivers, 1.5 million acre feet, to Mexico. It created an international boundary and water commission. And each nation has appointed commissioners who work with their state departments. And they deal with everything that's dealt with in managing a river. Used to be boundary disputes were mostly what they spent their time on. Now they spend a lot of time on water issues. Thoughts, questions? Go ahead. Yeah.
So is that 1.5 million acre feet, is that divvied up between the Rio Grande, the Tijuana, and the Colorado?
No, that's just for the Colorado. Thank you. Yeah, there's lots of disputes going on the Rio Grande right now. Here on the Colorado, it's pretty much United States delivers to Mexico. On the Rio Grande, it's Mexico delivers to the United States. And there's always accounting issues. And, are you stealing my water? Are you being fair? Yeah. So those get all part of that conversation. Anything else? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of like they're not depleted that much, so they get depleted.
Yeah, the 1.0 million acre feet comes from tributaries in the lower basin, so we have no responsibility.
So it's just 7.5.
So it's that it's actually 75 million over 10,
right.
10 years.
And then, so is there was there ever a time in history where the lower basin states or any of the states used their maximum amount, or has there been no? It's not a question of maximum amount.
If you ask the upper basin, the lower basin has done that from the beginning. They've overused their maximum amount. They've used beyond their compacted cut. In fact, in the late 90s, our governor, Ken Salazar, who was the executive director of DNR, Jim Blockhead, who was our compact commissioner, flew to California, collected all the states, the other six basin states, and said, California, you are consistently using 5.5 million acre feet a year. Your appropriation is 4.4. We have a concern that you're setting up an economy and you're setting your people up. If we start, in any case, you're taking too much. We called it the California diet to 4.4. At the time we did that, we had a lot of surplus water in the river. A lot of surplus water. That was the late 1990s. In fact, we have surplus guidelines that were finalized in 2001. Guess what happened in 2001? That's when the bottom dropped out of the bucket. So it was interesting. So we kind of forget about the surplus guidelines, but they were there. And that is concern. I'm going to talk a little bit about more of our concerns as we go on.
I guess just to make sure.
Sure.
So the situation of Colorado now in the last 20 years, especially they had budgeted 18 million acre feet in the river per year. Everybody was using it, things were sort of fine, a little bit really lot less prior appropriation. But now because there's sort of a shortage, right? The drought, the mega drought of climate change. And the population. Climate strain and the development strain that's resulting in this compact raging, essentially.
That's the stress.
Yeah.
And I'll get into a little bit more of that as we go through. And I'm going to back up One thing I wanted to notice is that we have Upper Basin and Lower Basin, but you'll notice that there's a piece of Arizona here in the Upper Basin portion, and there's a piece of New Mexico here in the Lower Basin portion. And so so in those states, they have a chunk of the Upper Basin supply and a chunk of the Lower Basin supply. But when we're talking generally about the Upper Basin states and the Lower Basin states, it's really the deficient states, the Big Four, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico up top, Arizona, California, and Nevada in the Lower Basin. Sure, you can. Yeah, I love your questions. Go for it.
If one of the main examples of the Lower Basin, like it's a seven state compact, it's four and three, or is it four? If it's Nevada in the Lower Basin,
I'm sorry, the
Nevada. The Lower Basin.
Nevada is in the Lower Basin.
So it's Nevada, California, and Arizona.
Right.
But really the use is coming from California and Arizona as part of the continent.
Nevada only got, and we'll come up to that, 300 acre feet a year, 300,000 acre feet a year. Nobody anticipated Las Vegas. So they definitely got the short end of the stick in these negotiations. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I had a question kind of I went into a little bit about the like surplus thing, but then also that there is a drought that can reduce the number of water that's given to Mexico, as they said, but I think also to the lower states.
If in the treaty for both the Rio Grande and the Colorado, if there is what's called an extraordinary drought, those are the words that are used, then United States does not have to deliver all of the 1.5 million. Mexico takes a percentage shortage. If we here in the United States are taking a shortage, New Mexico, or Mexico takes a shortage. Never been tested. It's been talked about on the Rio Grande, but we have never wanted to go that route. That gets really, that starts getting into big P politics. Nations arguing in my letter, but yeah. So, okay. Oh, you guys have such great questions. Keep it up. All right. So, Upper Basin, Lower Basin. In 1948, the four Upper Basin states and Arizona got together and put together the Upper Colorado River Compact. This compact divides up the water, the flow in the river, by percentages. So not a certain amount, but a percentage of the river. Then Arizona ends up also, because of that little chunk that we looked at, gets 500,000 acre feet a year. They created a compact commission, which is its members are somebody from each state and the federal government. They collect data. They decide what the consumptive uses have been in the Upper Basin. They decide what the flows have been. If the Upper Basin has to curtail to meet that 75 over 10 year average, then the commission decides who has to give up how much water. Colorado, you have to give up X amount. Utah, you have to give up X amount. Very complicated. I'm not going to go into the actual formulas that they have, but a lot depends on, did you overuse your compact apportionment for the last 2 years? Well, if you did, then you have to give up first. So they were really thinking about, we're here in the Upper Basin. We have taken on the risk of variable flows, and we need to make sure we understand how it's going to operate should we not be meeting our obligations.
The Upper Basin, you're right. The Upper Basin.
You know, not under prior appropriation, under gravity. And the way it has worked in the Upper Basin, and Brad Udall will explain this when he comes to. We here in the Upper Basin, all those states are prior appropriation states. We use an average of 450,000 acre feet a year. All of the Upper Basin states. Last year, we only used 350,000 acre feet. And it wasn't because of conservation. It was because the water wasn't there. All these states follow the prior appropriation doctrine, and they cut off their own water rights within each state just because there's a senior person downriver that has a right to it. Not in Utah. Can't cut off a Colorado right from Utah. But you can cut off Colorado right junior for Colorado senior call. Make sense? Not quite.
I have one question, and this is kind of different than what you were just talking about, but I was wondering, is the 50,000 extra acre feet per year to Arizona, is that because they're like partially in the Upper Basin?
That was figured out, you know, that little piece of Arizona here. That was decided, that was a negotiated number. Basically, that's what Arizona thought it would develop in a reasonable way. I don't know. I don't think they've done that yet, but they've got some projects going on. Anything else? Go ahead.
So historically, the Upper Basin, like, so they were setting 18 million acre feet, whatever, 7.5 up top, 8.5 below, 1.5. But you just said kind of that the Upper Basin, I mean, it's not even using like anything. So then the
we're not even using 500,000 acre feet.
How much water is the Lower Basin? Using 7.5, or are they? I guess I'm trying to sort of.
Like, well, I'm going to get to that. I have a spreadsheet. Well, kind of. For lawyers.
I'm just a little bit dumbfounded that like the numbers were so wrong in the beginning. And at some point, there had to be like a collective awareness of the fact that those numbers were wrong, right? But the compact was never changed.
To change the compact, you have to go back to Congress. You have to go to 7.5. In this day and age, we could see this train coming. 2001, 2002, 2003. In fact, a lawyer for Denver Water, said it's the slowest moving train. You can't get off the track. It's crazy. We didn't get off the track. We kept trying to alter how fast it was going and where it was going. And I'll come back to that. What's hard for people to understand. Well, let me go to my next slide here. When the compact was signed, one of the purposes of the compact was he had these devastating floods in the Lower Basin in Arizona and California. And storage was needed to help control those floods. And so Congress then authorized the building of Hoover Dam. Hoover, of course, named because he was the chairman of the compact group that negotiated the compact. And they also authorized the All-American Canal, a whole bunch of other little projects. Parker Dam is right here. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. All-American Canal is here, comes out of the Colorado River, goes into California. But the other thing Congress did, because the states in the Lower Basin couldn't get their act together, they said, California, you get 4.4 million acre feet from this reservoir. Arizona, you get 2.8 million acre feet a year. And Nevada, you get 300,000 acre feet. First time ever and only that Congress decided how to split a river. Usually they leave that to the states, but obviously these states weren't getting along. And by the way, none of them accepted those numbers as we started to, as Hoover Dam was built, contracts with reclamation started working to control, to deliver to the Lower Basin. You have to have that access. You have to have a contract with the Secretary of Interior through reclamation to get water, to get the water out of the Colorado River. It essentially makes the secretary what we call the water master. The secretary controls who gets it and who doesn't. Yeah. I know this is a confusing slide. Let me just get to this one. And it's got a lot of noise on it. But it gets kind of to the point that Jake, you were asking about. So we know in the lower basin, California, Arizona, and Nevada have definite amounts of water that they can get. They can get those definite amounts of water because Hoover Reservoir stores that water and then can just release it out of Hoover to get it. In the upper basin, those states only have percentages. So Colorado's percent is 51.75% of what's in the river. Now, if 7.5 million acre feet were in the river, we would be due 3.9 million acre feet. Same then for Wyoming, 14%, Salt Lake, 23%, and New Mexico, 11.25%. So that's the complicating factor, is that first that water wasn't here. When it was here, we weren't using it. And if we're not using the water, we're obligated to let it go downstream. So that's helped in the overuse of water that's happened in the lower basin.
Those percentages in the upper basin were determined by the upper Colorado.
Those were negotiated.
Because Arizona is just sort of like California, it's developing so much. So that was Congress imposing. So the upper basin is almost much more of a.
They were more congenial.
Yeah.
They figured out how to split up the river.
Do you call that a more riparian approach, or is that just sort of this?
No, it's an equitable portion. This is what we call it. So there are three ways to get equitable apportions. One is two states fighting. So like the Laramie, I talked last time about Wyoming and Colorado in litigation in front of the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decided how much each state got on the river. The second is the compact clause that we've been talking about. And the third and only time that's happened is when the Congress made that apportionment. But it took the Supreme Court later on to tell those states that that was their apportionment. They argued among themselves until the 60s about who gets what.
Another really small one. Sorry. So the measuring points for these are sort of how the Commonwealth is leaf area.
The upper
basement, they want to leave, so they got to make sure X amount passes through. And then the Hoover Dam is actually that other point where they can kind of calculate the flow of water that goes through. Those are kind of each other other points too.
And we're going to talk about a couple of them. But yeah, you got it. So that's how it was for a while, once the reservoir filled. Then, I can't not talk about Parker Dam without talking about the Arizona Navy. So Arizona and California, they get the legislation that we were just looking at that says, yes, you can build Hoover Dam, All-American Canal, and some of these other facilities like Parker Dam. Well, the federal government in Arizona just walked up to the river on the California side and started digging. Well, California took offense to that. Hey, this is California land, not Arizona or federal land. And the governor was so pissed. He sent out the National Guard. And he created a navy. Two of these flatboats were his navy. His admiral was, love this, Nellie Bush, the first woman admiral in Arizona. So he had What it, look at it. Two ships. He got the National Guard out there, 40 riflemen, 20 machine gunners, lined up on the Colorado riverbank, making sure that California and or Arizona and the federal government were not stepping on California property. Well, Nellie, one of her boats, went on a recon mission one night, ended up getting stuck on a sandbar. And the California folks helped them get off the sandbar, gave them hot chocolate, warm clothes, and, you know, they were just being human. But the ploy worked, and the Arizona governor then ended up getting from the federal government a new federal project, the irrigation project on the Gila River that Arizona wanted. So just a little bit of, this is sometimes how things work. So we had the Hoover Dam. We had some of these smaller dams to deliver to Mexico and California. And we, in the upper basin, realized that we needed to protect ourselves so that we can meet our compact obligation. Flows were just too variable. So we asked for a dam to be put on the river to store those extra flows that came in and to catch them so that we could then deliver that water to Lake Mead. Now in the 1950s, this was a very, very controversial. This is just the beginning of the environmental movement. You may have heard of the man, Edward Abbey. He wrote the Monkey Wrench Game. That whole book is about blowing up Powell Dam. And he fought strenuously in Congress and with his friends that no, we shouldn't be putting these dams on the river. Now, Powell Dam wasn't the only one. There were a bunch of other storage project dams that were proposed in this legislation. There were two, though, that Edward Abbey had focused on. One was Glen Canyon. The other one was Echo Park. Echo Park is on the state line from Colorado and Utah, off the Colorado River there. They had negotiated, a lot of negotiation going on, and Edward Abbey then gave up Glen Canyon Dam for the Parker, for Echo Dam. So no dam on Echo Park, but we built the dam on the Glen Canyon Dam then on the river. Along with that, they approved four other basic projects: Flaming Gorge Dam in Wyoming, Blue Mesa, Morrow Point, and Crystal Dam, that's called the Curie County Unit, Navajo Dam, and those dams then all help collect in the good years and push that water to Powell. Looks like you're going to ask a question. So that's the other thing that this act did is it established a fund for the power revenues. Both Mead and Powell have power generators, and they create a lot of power, a lot of actually inexpensive power, mostly for the indigenous folks in all the states. Power revenues then have been used to help endangered species. We have recovery programs on San Juan and Colorado River. We have the salinity control program on Colorado River. We're going to come back to those dams because those have been in the news this last year, this last few months.
So the original dams that were built with the Colorado River contract, project were mainly for those lower basin states development to be used, but these upper basin states were used. The intention was really so that they would deflate the flow or meet their obligations.
The intention was so they could develop and meet that compact obligation.
What happens again if the upper basin doesn't meet its obligation?
Like we're going to come to that. Because that's a lot of talk that's going on right now. Anyone else? Questions? Got it? So I promised we were going to come back to the Indian tribes. There are 29, maybe 30 recognized tribes that live in the Colorado River Basin. In the early 1900s, the Supreme Court heard a case on Indian water rights. Indians on a Montana reservation said, Montana's taking all of our water. We should have enough water to keep ourselves alive, essentially. Supreme Court agreed. And they said, you get all the water you need for the reservation, and you are a senior right because your priority is the date of the reservation. Simplified, lots of other things going on. These tribes were not talked to, consulted, nothing. And they are finally getting a voice. So in Arizona v. California, this is a 64 case, Supreme Court case. This is where the Supreme Court said, California, Nevada, Arizona, you have been appropriated 4.4. That was 1.2, 2.4, I can't remember what Arizona's was. And said that's it. Stop fighting. That's what you've got. That's what you get. That's the amount you can get out of contracts. They also determined some reserved water rights for five tribes. But they said that the tribe's water right comes out of the state share. So in this particular case, the five tribes were in Arizona. So if Arizona's apportionment, whatever the tribes get, comes out of their pot, essentially. Brad, you know I was going to answer that question right now about 9 million acres. It's really scary. They also talked about distributing surplus. That didn't happen. We've never had to use that. And they charged the secretary with said to the secretary, when you charge consumptive use to the lower basin entity, you essentially charge it where they get it, at their head.
I'm wondering when the federal government decided that they would hold the water rights of trust for the tribes. Because, like, was that ever explicitly said in these cases, or is that just how it's always been?
That's the law. They're the trustee. And that's caused a lot of difficulty between tribes and the feds. So let me, here, I'm getting behind. So then we have the Colorado River Project Act, which brought us Central Arizona Project. Also, 602A storage. That was a way of balancing need and PAL as the river was operating in the good years. And required reclamation to put in some long-range operating guidelines, criteria. Central Arizona Project is a 336-mile-long project. Water is pumped uphill all the way, uses a lot of energy. It serves 5 million people, which is more than 80% of the state's population. Most of the water goes to agriculture and some of the Indian tribes get water off the Central Arizona Project. In order to get this project, Arizona agreed to be junior to California. Meaning California gets its 4.4 before Arizona gets in. That is in play right now with as much, with as little water as we have on the river. Okay. You're going to hear this from Brad, but here is a chart from starting in 1964 of what the flows in the river have been at Leaf Hill. You can see we had a lot of good years in the 80s, started dropping off in the 2000s. We thought we had 18 million acre feet. Now we have 9.6 million acre feet. It's a lot of stress on the river. So we saw this freight train coming, and Secretary Gorton, by the way, is from Colorado. She was the Attorney General here in the 90s. Went to the states and said, we have a crisis coming. We need to manage the river differently and better. You states, figure it out. And if you don't tell me how to do it, I'll figure it out. So a federal threat on this river has always worked on peace. 18 months later, the states came back with a plan, and that plan was the 2007 interim guidelines. Those guidelines brought a different way to balance Meade and Powell, and then it also provided that Arizona and Nevada would cut back their water use if the flows were at a certain, or if the elevations of Powell would be at certain levels. And a lot of times you'll see this chart, which explains the balancing tiers. If Meade is here, then Powell is here, or if Powell is here, Meade's down here, then Powell's got to pour more. So it's a real engineering feat, quite honestly. But it wasn't enough. And notice I said California didn't take any cuts, agree to any cuts. Arizona was the one that was going to take it when the drought hit, when we had to do this. Didn't stop. Aridification, both reservoirs are diving fast. I don't know if you've seen the news stories. They found a lot of interesting things in Lake Bead. Bodies, unfortunately, but a lot of things are popping up. So the federal government came back and said, states, come to an agreement or we'll do it for you. And that brought us the 2019 drought contingency plans. So each of the basins had these plans. In the lower basin, they increased their shortage provisions. And I believe California agreed at some point to start taking some shortages. They had some incentives to bank water and lead. And they recognized that there was an overuse in the lower basin. In the upper basin, we have what we call the Drought Response Operations Agreement. That means those three reservoirs, those three group of reservoirs I talked about, they're dumping water out of those reservoirs to put into Powell so that Powell can put it into. So far, there has been 700,000 acre feet that has been dumped out of those reservoirs. A couple of years ago, you probably read Mesa was down considerably. No more boating, no more fishing. So it's put a real crimp in these. Mexico came to the table and said, we want to share shortages. Of course, we gave them some money and some projects to get that from them. And we have these international minutes. Minutes are the way that you, they're not amendments to the treaty, they're how you operate under the treaty, essentially. And here's the final product. Now, you read in the news last week that Commissioner Tootin, said that there were going to be shortages declared in the basin. And she talked about level 2A shortages. Well, that, I know this is a busy chart. That's this level here, where Arizona takes a cut, 512. Nevada takes a cut, 21. At this point, Colorado or California doesn't take anything. And then Mexico takes a cut of 80. So that was the next piece of the agreement. Still didn't work. Still wasn't enough. Mother Nature proved that she was smarter than the rest of us. And we heard in the news that the secretary, this is Commissioner of Reclamation, announced at a federal hearing, we have to have 2 to 4 million acre feet of use cut from the river. That woke up a lot of people. That's a lot of water. Only 9 million acre feet of water on average in the river now. We've got to cut 2 to 4 million. Oh, thank you. Okay. So people are back at the table. States continue to argue and try to figure out what to do. Congress came to the rescue. They appropriated in the Inflation Reduction Act $4 billion for drought relief in the West, priority going to the Colorado River. Now, I promised I was going to talk about the lower basin overuse. I'm going to stop there because you can hear about that from others. And that's kind of my spreadsheet about how it works. The lower basin wasn't charged consumptive use, wasn't charged for the evaporation or system losses for deliveries. They ended up using 1.2 million acre feet a year over the 8.5. That then caused not much water coming in Powell, all this water, Powell being dumped into Meade. Meade continues to make 9 million acre feet of releases to the lower basin, and now we're at a crisis point. You guys stayed awake. Congratulations. Yeah.
So I was just wondering, and this kind of explains it, but we have all these giant infrastructure projects and these huge dams and stuff. Are the evaporative losses off of these being factored into the response at all, and into our stream flow?
In the upper basin, they've always been factored. In the lower basin, never. So when we consumptively use water, so when water sitting in Mesa, we get charged for that evaporation. Water that's from out of Blue Mesa delivered into Powell, we get charged for those system losses, evaporation, transportation. So that's the imbalance that helped. I mean, lower basin was overusing anyway. This just caused a crunch. Does that make sense? You guys have been very attentive. Here's one of my favorite thought last time that I love it. I was at a meeting last week where we had several states talking to the water users in Colorado. For all the battles that had happened on this river, this river is a shining example of collaboration and cooperation. And you're going to hear a lot about that the rest of the semester. Thank you guys very much and have a good evening. And thank you.